Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing great. With all this talk of politics, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I think it involves stockpiling resources and a bunker in a long, flat area somewhere.
You one of them bunker, the was it shelter people, whatever they called,
the doomsday preppers?
Yeah, prepper. You a prepper?
Yep, that's what I'm going to become, depending on how this election goes out.
I have seen your garage. We also have a guest. We have a returning guest, Andrew Bloom, from theandrewblog.net, correct?
That is correct.
Correct. Welcome, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I wanted to thank you guys for having me back on, especially with the unseemly things I said about the Widow Neubauer.
If you're gonna voice those opinions anywhere, here is probably the most appropriate.
That's true. And you gotta stake out your territory as quickly as you can.
That's very, very true. Before we get going, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon, patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. For $2 a month, you can gain access to all of our bonus content, includes monthly bonus episodes, weekly new episode reviews of new episodes, bad drawings for each of our podcast episodes, written things by me every week. There's other stuff too, I'm sure. We have someone to thank, Matt.
We do, yay!
We do. Right before the recording of this episode, Morgan Lee. Thank you very much, Morgan.
Morgan, you rock.
On to this week's episode. Very, I guess, prescient episode with the primaries going on. It is Sideshow Bob Roberts, episode 2F02, originally aired October 9th, 1994. Written by Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein. Directed by Mark Kirkland. Finished tied for 64th place in the ratings. Nielsen rating of 8.6. Sixth highest rated show on Fox that week. Wow. Six. That
was it's just going to get worse as time goes on.
Yeah, well, it ebbs and flows, but The Simpsons endures. It just
gets better and better.
We just did a new episode review like 2 days ago, Matt.
I know.
It was not better than this episode. This episode guest stars Kelsey Grammer as Sideshow Bob, Larry King as himself, Dr. Demento as himself, Phil Hartman as Lionel Hutz in a very small role, and Henry Corden as Fred Flintstone, very briefly. Before we get into the events of the episode, I'm going to try and stay objective about the political stuff in it, but no promises.
That's true. All the opinions herein are the writers of The Simpsons and not those of The Simpsons Show podcast.
Although I'm fairly certain we align for the most part. Yeah.
Well, look, I think before we go into the episode, it's important to remember that at the end of the day, The Simpsons is a comedy show and a cartoon at that. And in real life, there is no way that a former television star with ridiculous hair could ever enter a race as a political outsider and have success with slogans and showmanship instead of substance. I mean, that makes the entire thing easier for me to swallow. I don't know about you guys.
No, it's...
Oh, he went there. Wow.
It was going to happen.
I would say one way I'm very proud this episode differs from reality. There's less racism in this episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is depressing.
Sideshow Bob is a better candidate than Trump. I'll make that bold statement there. I doubt we have very many Trump supporters as listeners, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you're a supporter of Donald Trump, you might just want to skip this one. You might. I don't know. I'm not going to promise there's not going to be any more disparaging remarks, at least on my behalf.
Figured I'd get it out of my system up front.
No, it's probably going to come up again. We're going to talk. It's about politics. We're going to have to talk about politics a little bit. Episode begins with Homer listening to Birch Barlow, who is the Simpsons Rush Limbaugh analog. It really speaks to Homer. We see them both gobbling up donuts. I think Homer's the only person we see of the regular cast that likes Birch Barlow. The family likes him.
Yeah, both that's Lenny, true. Even Lenny and Carl.
Lenny and Carl don't like him. I mean, they're college educated. They're smart fellows. I mean,
you hear Mayor Quimby listening to him, oddly enough.
Well, we get they established very early on that he is a Springfield establishment. And he kind of talks about Springfield in a way that makes you feel like he is there.
You know, there are three things we're never going to get rid of here in Springfield. One, the bats in the public library. Two, Mrs. McFearley's compost heap. And three, our six-term mayor, the illiterate, tax-cheating, wife-swapping, pot-smoking spendocrat, Diamond Joe Quimby.
Hey, I am no longer illiterate.
We've never heard of Birch Barlow before, but immediately by him referencing all that very weird local Springfield things, it immediately sets him in as a Springfield establishment figure.
A Springfieldianite, even?
Sure. And he's obviously, you know, a conservative, doesn't like Joe Quimby, who is a parody of the Kennedy. You know, he's often used as a parody for the Kennedys and Democrats, the Northeastern Democrat in particular. Mm-hmm.
He thinks Ted Kennedy lacks integrity.
Of course. As Homer's listening to Birch Barlow, we see that Lisa's also listening to Birch Barlow. She's doing it for a project. Marge is not happy. Marge feels, I guess, icky listening to him. She doesn't like controversy.
Which is good for Marge. That shows she has ethics and morals and, you know, common sense.
She just doesn't like controversy. She doesn't like the antagonism. I think she just wants everyone to get along. She dumps Bart's fireworks, which he was... as actually going to use for school. Really good. It's a good gag.
I want to point out the truth. It appears that he's going to have some kind of indoor fireworks display, which seems terribly dangerous to me.
Nah, they were special indoor fireworks.
Oh, well, that's good.
I think it would. Groundskeeper Willie was backstage with a fire extinguisher. That he was ready in case of whatever happened. Lisa's in the car with Homer, still listening to Birch Barlow, and it's at this point that we hear Sideshow Bob call in. This clip is kind of long, but I couldn't stop it, so it just kept being good. So we get Bob as he'd been established as a Republican before this point.
I don't believe so.
No, I don't.
At the end of Black Widower, he says, "You can't keep the Democrats out of the White House forever, and then I'll be back with all my criminal buddies." But
yeah,
that could go either way, I guess.
Yeah, he doesn't necessarily. So, intro, Sideshow Bob.
All right, my friends, let's go to the phones. First up is Bob from South Springfield. Welcome to you, sir.
Hello, Birch. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Kudos for bringing the public back to the Republican Party. It's high time people realized we conservatives aren't all Johnny Hate-mongers and Charlie Bible-thumps or even, God forbid, George Bushes.
That sounds like Sideshow Bob.
Yes, ma'am, Sideshow Bob. Yakking it up on the old yak box.
Dad, I'll spare you the embarrassment of admitting you don't know who Sideshow Bob is. Sideshow Bob used to be Krusty the Clown's sidekick, but in 1990 he framed Krusty for armed robbery and Bart got him put in jail. When he got out, he married Aunt Selma and tried to murder her.
Oh, Sideshow Bob!
Bart, your mortal enemy is on the radio!
It's time for more Dementia with Dr. Demento!
Ah!
And now, the funny thought!
I meant your other mortal enemy, Sideshow Bob. Sideshow Bob? Oh, I'm only 10 and I already got two mortal enemies.
I could not.
That is quite a few at that age.
I mean, yeah, two is more. I mean, Maggie only has one.
That's true. I didn't get my second until well into high school.
It's really. They said they included that Sideshow Bob recap because they thought people wouldn't remember. It seems strange. I mean, I enjoy the fact that they use Homer's idiocy to recap everything that Bob has done. But do people not? I guess there are new.
Well, I figure back then you didn't have DVRs and those sorts of things, so people could be coming in week from week and maybe have missed like the two episodes he's already been in. So it was probably a good idea back then.
Three episodes.
Yeah, I mean, it was the day before serialized television, so you sort of had to throw in these like last time on if you wanted to do any kind of continuing story.
Yeah, I guess it's easy to think, like, of course everyone knows who Sideshow Bob is, you know, 20 years later. I really want to know why Bart is enemies with Dr. Demento. I feel like...
That'll be a story next season.
I feel like that is like a story worth telling. And Homer not remembering that the man that tried to kill his son and kidnapped him.
Well, he doesn't remember his boss, or his boss doesn't remember him. So it's Springfield. It's in the water, obviously.
It must be.
I love his attempt to cover it up with, Sideshow Bob. So there were another side blank Bob he had confused him with.
Well, of course, the many Bobs that are in Springfield. At the same time, we see Mayor Quimby. He's around in the background of this episode a lot because he becomes the opposition at Sideshow Bob, and he renames an expressway, Matlock Expressway, to placate the senior voters.
I believe the word you're looking for is pander.
You got to please your constituency, Matt. All right, you know, and
that's absolutely true. And seniors are the ones who vote. I'm just saying it's pretty obviously pandering.
But it's at least it's only a name.
And at least they didn't give him any money.
Hot dames and plenty of them.
Yes, that too. Bart, knowing that Bob has been calling in, is listening, and we see him listening in class, where we get another call from Bob, now in the midst of a prison riot.
But it would be terribly myopic of me to blame all my current woes on one spiky-haired little simpleton.
Myopic, or to say the least, intransigent. Now, you mentioned some woes there.
Well, you see, Birch, I'm presently incarcerated. Convicted of a crime I didn't even commit. Attempted murder. Now, honestly, what is that? Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry, do they? Really, now this is a personal call.
My friends, isn't this just typical? Another intelligent conservative here, railroaded by our liberal justice system, just like Colonel Oliver North, Officer Stacy Coon, and cartoon spokesperson Joe Camel. Well, I've had it. I am going to make it my mission to see that our friend Bob is set free.
No! Despite Bart's objections, the people of South Africa can now vote in free democratic elections.
that is one of my favorite gags of all time.
So I have to put it out there. I'm not going to make a definitive statement on this, but I think that the attempted murder line is at least a nominee for best Simpsons line in history.
It's really good. Mm. It is. Yeah. It's a combination of, like, the clever Simpsons writing, Sideshow Bob as a character, Kelsey Grammer. And by the way, Kelsey Grammer does an amazing job as always. He is tremendous. And knowing that Kelsey Grammer is a ardent conservative and Republican, I'm curious how...
why he actually did this.
Well, I know they did that on purpose. Like, they purposely made... that is part of the motivation they made Bob a Republican, is because they knew Kelsey Grammer was one. I don't know, like, it is quite cartoonish in this episode, the way that Republicans are presented, and I don't know how much of that Kelsey Grammer played into, or... He, regardless of how he feels, he certainly went whole hog in his performance, like he almost always does. He really, Bob is a true villain, and he goes for it 100%.
And I think one of the great things about having Grammer guest star on the show is that, you know, a lot of live actors have trouble doing voiceover because they're used to using facial expressions and body language and things like that to convey emotion and thinking and things like that. But Grammer has such a distinctive voice, and he's so good at using it to tell you what Bob is thinking or feeling, or in his case, mostly plotting, that it really works on the show.
And
that's definitely true. I really enjoy especially Bob's mode of speaking, which really puts him in the arch conservative camp. I feel like it really sets him apart from most of the people in The Simpsons. Most of them, I feel like, have a really either like northeastern rural accent or kind of a Midwest accent. Bob definitely does not.
It's really, like, it's strange how well having the guy who has committed multiple capital offenses just become a mayoral candidate for Springfield, but it works really well. Birch Barlow is, as we heard, very upset and enlists his listeners to help free Bob from prison as a quote-unquote political prisoner. Mo briefly thinks that he is urging an uprising. He is with and Mo has grenades, of course.
Well, he plays Russian roulette in his back room, so obviously he has lots of grenades.
That is true. And Mayor Quimby, as he usually does, gives in to the pressure of the mob and releases Sideshow Bob. Hey, that rhymes. And we go to a commercial with Sideshow Bob, a free man. Matt?
Oh, sorry. I'm...
You okay?
I bet. Yep. Totally cool. Didn't miss the commercial thing. All right. When we come back from commercial, this is, I believe, our first appearance at Republican headquarters. Do you guys remember an earlier time?
I think this is it.
Okay.
It doesn't show up in the one where Burns runs for governor, right?
No. I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. But for those of you who haven't seen it, it is a tower, essentially a medieval tower on a hillside. There's lightning and thunder at all times. It's very Vlad Dracul-esque. It's great. If you're in the Tapped Out game, you can totally get it. It's awesome.
Well, Dracula is it could be actually Dracula's house because Dracula is there, or a vampire.
Well, there's a vampire. We don't know that he's Count Dracula.
I'm saying it's Count Dracula. I'm making that claim right now.
Fine.
I think he's more of a Nosferatu, like the silent film vampire.
He's Count Dracula. I don't want to hear any. He's Count. I mean, Count.
If you say so, sir. If you say so.
It's your podcast.
Count Dracula.
Anyway, the other Republicans that are at this wonderful meeting is led by Mr. Burns, of course, Rainier Wolfcastle, the rich Texan, the blue-haired lawyer, Count Dracula.
There we go.
Birch Barlow and Dr. Hibbert. For some reason.
A doctor guy. He's rich. He's money.
Yeah, probably.
These are all...
It's all the professionals.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all about protecting your money.
Well, I mean, that's... I know many doctors, and many of them are Republicans. I hate to be that... That's the stereotypical bit.
I think that goes against the Hippocratic Oath.
I don't think so, Matt. I don't think the Hippocratic Oath says anything about, like, your political party.
Well, that's a discussion for our politics podcast coming soon. No, anyway,
no, it's not coming. We're not ever doing that. I get enough of that.
The
on
Republicans
Facebook.
At Springfield are they're attempting to select their candidate for the mayor race because they really want to unseat Joe Quimby because he is pretty much the stereotype of a bad Democrat to them. So Birch Barlow, having recently released Sideshow Bob from prison, has a suggestion.
Marty, I'm way ahead of you. If you'll just open that door, you'll see the next mayor of Springfield.
What'd it say?
No. Bob, come in.
A fine Mohawk to you all.
Well, he's even better. I agree. I like the human touch.
Now, whether Sideshow Bob is actually better than a water cooler, I couldn't tell you. But I just love the slightly evil music that plays when Bob enters.
Well,
really sets the tone.
They use the same musical cues they used in Cape Fear.
It's Bob's theme essentially.
Yeah, and
I like the polite applause for the water cooler. they're on board with it.
They're like,
why not? Work with that.
He's Quimby. We don't really like that water cooler. Who knows? I do want to say that Harry Shearer does a great job as Birch Barlow as well. He really does.
Oh yeah, definitely
does an excellent job.
There were times I really believed I was listening to Rush Limbaugh. Did he do a guest voice on this?
And also throughout this scene, there are references to Satanism and the occult. So it's not exactly subtle what the Simpsons are saying about at least the Springfield Republican Party.
That's true. Springfield, National, whichever. They're interchangeable.
Well, we're probably going to touch on this several times, but the show itself is kind of widely known as being very liberal and often being, not fair and balanced. They
shocking.
Accused of attacking the Republican Party more than the Democrats, even though several notable Simpsons writers are not, maybe not Republicans, but certainly not Democrats. John Swartzwelder comes to mind. He is a libertarian, a fairly devout libertarian.
A rabid libertarian, would you say?
I only know what I've heard. He's he's never been on a commentary track, except for that one time. But I don't know, like, the Republicans in this, it's hard to see it as really biting commentary. It's really, it's, they're like cartoonish villains. Like, they're like mustache twirling. It's not...
Well, yeah, it essentially, they are, you know, take whatever gripes you have with the Republican Party and then amp it up to 11. And that's what they're going with here. Because I don't think they're really trying to push for any real change. They're just saying, hey, wouldn't it be funny if, like, the Republicans were super evil?
I mean,
they do have, like, Sideshow Bob talking about brutalizing criminals and Birch Barlow, you know, talking about locking up the homeless. Like, I think The Simpsons is generally a more balanced show than it gets credit for. And I think, in particular, they're much more anti-institution than they are anti-any particular party. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think this is the poster child episode for, like, balance.
No,
I think that would be the Stampy episode, since Stampy rampages through both the Republican and Democratic conventions.
It's true. And doesn't the Republican one has a banner that says we're evil and the Democrat has a banner that says we can't govern?
Yes. I believe those are the banners.
But I'm not, you know, again, we're not going to go too deep into actual policy, but I don't know. It's The Simpsons, I think Matt Groening has always said that it is... At first and foremost, it is anti-authority, and it is, you know, skepticism and questioning that authority. And I don't know. Entertainment writers. You're not going to get a huge amount of conservatives. It's generally people who work in Hollywood are liberal, and I'm sorry that that's how it is sometimes.
But at the same time, like, they take a lot of pot shots. Pot shots isn't the right word, but they make plenty of fun of Quimby as a sort of ineffectual, corrupt mayor, and he's a symbol of, you know, the Kennedy-style liberalism, and they are apt to make fun of the school quite a bit, which I guess, to my mind, is often considered a more liberal institution. As well as the media.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tricky for me because I don't think, especially nowadays, like, most of people in my generation, of our generation, like, the Kennedys are things that we know JFK was a president. We know about Robert Kennedy. We know about Ted Kennedy. We know that they existed, but they mostly have all passed away before I got to voting age. Like, I don't, like,
oh,
they,
definitely, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's not, I know in them in an historical context, but it's... When, and I think also it's played up simply because of the rivalry between George Bush and The Simpsons, you know, early on, it kind of set the stage from that point on, like, especially, and George Bush's senior, H.W. Bush, his criticisms of the show were unfounded, but I think that is, it has set a kind of, what's a good word for it? A foundation, tone foundation for animosity between The Simpsons and the Republicans. They have criticized Clinton, but at the same point, they basically left George W. unscathed, like, throughout his entire presidency. They really barely even touched on him.
Well, that's just too easy, really.
Well, isn't there a bit where Homer refers to him as Commander Cuckoo Bananas or something like that?
That sounds familiar, but I don't remember the episode it would be from.
Yeah. If it's from the newer ones, I've not watched them nearly as many times. We'll get there. And they also haven't talked about Obama much at all either, which I probably is for the best considering the political climate recently.
They have a Michelle Obama... not look alike, but like a sound alike appear in one episode with Lisa to encourage her botany.
Well, that's botany safe.
Yeah. who dislikes botany?
Crazy people.
Where are we, Matt? What's happening?
Okay. If we're finally going back to the show, talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Sideshow Bob and Mary Quimby are apparently doing a political stump speech to the local elementary school, which is only slightly weird. I'm pretty sure it's something they still do. Bob is, of course, being his crusty sidekick persona and doing a whole bunch of acrobatics and goofy stuff, and the kids are loving it. Bart and Lisa, knowing, you know, what Bob's actually like, they basically attempt to make Quimby more likable and get some attention. So they basically jump on him and say that he's great and they love him, and just it's a little weird. They're obviously pandering, and it's definitely one of those lesser of two evils kind of thing.
Which, I mean, they explicitly say.
Yes, yeah, several times in the episode, I think. This time he's the lesser of two evils, yeah. Immediately after this, while the media are interviewing Quimby, Bart gets grabbed by Bob and put into the limousine, where he basically warns Bart that no children have ever meddled with the Republican Party and lived to tell about it, which I believe, especially the Springfield Republican Party. They don't seem particularly good at those sorts of things, but they would at least try. They then cover him with Bob for Mayor bumper stickers and drop him off, which is followed by Homer being kicked out of the car from the Archie comics when the gang from Riverdale apparently kicks him out of Riverdale.
I really like the inexplicable appearance of Archie and his crew.
This is back so when Archie random. Was not cool.
Are you saying Archie's cool now, Matt?
It's definitely cooler than it was with Fiona Staples and Mark Waid and Chip Zdarsky. If you haven't read the new Jughead series, it is awesome. Go read it.
There you go, guys. You can go read some Archie
quick comic
sidebar. But I particularly like Homer as somehow who like hate reads Archie because
he hate reads it, is that what you said?
That's what he, well, I mean, we see him later on reading Archie and after he's been kicked out and he's like,
and calling them stuck up Riverdale punks.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. I also like that apparently in the Simpsons universe, the folks from the Archie comics are both a comic strip and real life people. So it's like a comic strip about their real lives. I don't know. Maybe they need another crossover with the Punisher to even things out.
Or Predator.
Or Predator.
Predator is even better.
You're just going to sneak that in everywhere you can, aren't you?
It just happened! The Archie vs. Predator comic came out like this year or last year.
Really? Is that recent? Huh.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry.
A lot of Archie comics.
Let's get back to The Simpsons real quick.
What about Archie?
Well, you save that for Handsome Boys. You talk with Eric about Archie you want.
He hates Archie.
I know, that's why it's funny. Anyway, back to The Simpsons. Immediately after this, we see Mayor Quimby's campaign commercial, and it's a humdinger.
Without a Mayor Quimby, our town would really stink. We wouldn't have a tire yard or a mid-sized roller rink.
We wouldn't have our gallows or a shiny Bigfoot track.
It's not the mayor's fault that the stadium collapsed.
Quimby. If you were running for mayor, he'd vote for you. Paid for by the mayor, Quimby for mayor, mayoral committee.
Which is the best tagline ever. If he were voting for mayor, he'd vote for you.
That commercial is wonderful. I have sung that commercial apropos of nothing more than one time.
Mm-hmm.
Rightfully so.
Exactly. Immediately after this, we see Bart and Lisa attempting to campaign for Quimby, which is where the lesser of two evils line is shown by Lisa. And Bart is yelling at people, giving them derogatory names such as Beardo, and telling them to vote for Quimby. They end up giving most of their bumper stickers to Jimbo and the gang, who I believe they wrap up Milhouse and just use a shopping cart to throw them down a hill, which is, it's fun. It's what kids do these days, or did back then before there was the internet. And they could, yell at other people over the internet. We then see Sideshow Bob campaigning, talking to the old folks like Mayor Quimby did. And I'm going to warn you, this is a long one, but I just couldn't stop it.
That Quimby fella promised to build us a Maslack Expressway. How are you going to top that, smart guy?
Well, how's this? I'll not only build the expressway, I will spend the remainder of this afternoon patiently listening to your interminable anecdotes.
Hot diggity damn! Me first! Not many people know I own the first radio in Springfield. Weren't much on the air then. Just Edison reciting the alphabet over and over. A, he'd say. Then B, C would usually follow.
Oh, Grandpa, that's a great, great story. I love it,
and a great reaction from Sideshow Bob.
He's willing to do what it takes, but he's not going to be happy about it. Yeah. Immediately after this, we get Bob's ad, which see for yourselves.
Mayor Quimby supports revolving door prisons. Mayor Quimby even released Sideshow Bob, a man twice convicted of attempted murder. Can you trust a man like Mayor Quimby? Vote Sideshow Bob for mayor.
That's a typical attack ad.
These are references to two famous ads that Bush Sr. used during his election in 1988 versus
Dukakis.
Yes, Dukakis. Thank you. Both about being soft on criminals and allowing people out to that. It's kind of morbid, so I don't want to touch on it too much.
They're based on reality, and we're moving on.
Yes, exactly. Bad things happen.
Anyway, we then move on to the debates hosted by Larry King himself, which is literally Larry King. He actually came to do one line, I guess.
He's done it before. He's appeared before just very small appearances.
He just enjoys popping by the studio to say, "Hey, how's it going? I'm Larry King.
As long as they animate his suspenders, he's fine."
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. It wouldn't be Larry King without his suspenders.
They never have to change his character model. You know, they can pop in the one every time he shows up. Same character model always works.
Yep. So at this debate, we have Bob practicing his facial expressions, which I guess is something you have to do as a politician. And you have poor Joe Quimby, who is sick or something, is taking a whole bunch of drowsy medicine. So he appears terrible, essentially. When asked a question, the Republican candidate, Bob, the thing is, Barlow is asking the question, so it's a fake question about a councilman who does not exist, and it's essentially to score points. I believe the phrase is, "I think Councilman Les Wynan ought to do more thinking and less whining," which is all right.
That's good. For a politician, it's not bad.
It's a good line. It's very disingenuous to ask about a fake councilman with a funny name so you can use the funny name in your joke.
I don't see how.
It's a strenuous question as some of the debate guys have been doing this season.
I know.
I'm not going to point anybody out specifically, but sometimes people are getting coddled a little bit. I don't know why Quimby is participating in this debate when it's Birch Barlow is the moderator.
Yeah, it does seem a little weird. Of course, when they ask Mayor Quimby questions, it is a long, wandering story about, I believe, the law enforcement budget. And essentially, you never actually get to hear his answer to the question because he rakes his hair back and it appears to have devil horns. And for some reason, the news station it's on, which is Fox, Larry King states that for sure, puts, you know, fiery flames around him to say that he is the devil, essentially.
But they put a disclaimer at the bottom of the screen. Okay, they explicitly
that makes it okay.
They explicitly say that they added them later.
That's right. That's like having a study that comes out your way and putting a little disclaimer. Oh yeah, we paid for this study. That's totally okay.
Yep. I mean, in the American political system, they do that often.
Yeah, I know.
That's what this whole episode is. That this is directly referencing the Nixon JFK debate where Nixon was recovering from illness and he looked, one, he's not as handsome as JFK, and two, he looked sickly and ill, sweaty and gross.
He'd just been recovered from the flu.
Yeah, so, and Quimby is also recovering. He's taking many,
something like NyQuil or something, Sudafed.
Yeah, it's the extra drowsy formula.
Well, I always...
didn't know existed.
Before speeches, I always take extra drowsy medicine. It really helps.
It makes you act drunk, which people love.
Especially,
love a good drunk.
Especially political... Yeah,
life of the party.
Political debates, everyone likes the drunk candidate.
Well, and the question that Birch Barlow asked Quimby is a reference to an actual question that was asked of Michael Dukakis in the 88 debates.
A lot of Dukakis in this.
People love Dukakis.
Yeah. Let's make fun of Dukakis.
By the barrel.
His name. He has a great name. Great name.
Anyway, at the end of the debate, we cut to people voting, and we don't cut to the smartest people, but they have good reasons to vote. Very solid reasons.
I don't agree with his Bart killing policy, but I do approve of his Selma killing policy.
Well, he framed me for armed robbery.
Man, I'm aching for that upper class tax cut.
Which I like that Springfield is one of the few places that still have the levers for voting. Is yep, no way to track that.
Lever?
It's just like having a Diebold system.
Diebold system?
Yes, they are the electronic voting machines that were found to have voting irregularities in the last few elections.
That's why I keep you around, Matt. You're so smart.
Mm-hmm. I keep being depressed with our political system. And
you're not alone, it makes apparently. Me seem fun. Apparently yeah. In America, you're not alone with that. There seems to be many people it's like true. You.
It's shocking. Anyway, we then cut to Mayor Quimby's return party where they're listening to Kent Brockman tell people, you know, who got what vote. With Sideshow Bob with 100%, Quimby with 1%, with a 1% margin of error, pretty obviously. So Bob wins quite handily, and his entire victory speech is a horrible, evil laugh.
You didn't pull the evil laugh, Matt?
Say what?
You didn't pull the evil laugh?
I did not pull the evil laugh. I can recreate it for you if you like.
No, that's okay. That's fine. I believe Kelsey Grammer has even gone on record saying he hates those laughs because they hurt his throat.
They do, yeah.
I imagine they would. Yeah, when we come back, we learn that the Simpsons house is directly in the way of the construction of the Matlock Expressway and will be destroyed in, what was it, 30, within 30 days?
72 hours.
72 hours. Never mind.
He's a reasonable man.
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. 72 hours. And Bob basically uses his power right away to persecute the Simpsons and Bart in particular. Bart is...
eminent domain, baby.
Bart is sent back to kindergarten.
Oh, you mean I have to repeat the fourth grade?
Well, yes, but not for 4 or 5 years. Bart, you're going to kindergarten.
Kindergarten? Now, boys and girls, who knows what this is? Triangle. Very good, Bart. You have first choice of toys for free play. Cool. I call the Flintstone phone.
Yeah, but jabba do. I like talking to you.
That goofy laugh.
Oh, I love Bart's laugh so much.
It's so good. It's just like... He like fits in kindergarten, you know? He's an overachiever there.
He's in his element.
Yeah. Lisa, in this, like a lot of Bob episodes, it evolves into a mystery. And Lisa is suspicious, as anyone should be in an election where it's 100% to 0%. With a two-party system, it's probably not a reliable result, routinely at least.
I mean, it's as legitimate as the results in Russian elections. I don't know why we should be concerned.
Oh, of course. Yeah, all those mysterious people that have disappeared, that all those people who've rivaled, you know, who've opposed Putin have just disappeared. Nothing nefarious about that at all.
No, not at all.
Of course not. And Lisa... As, you know, as she turns into, like, the kid detective, as she so often does in these types of episodes, she gets the election ballots from the court, is it library or the courthouse? I forget where she goes.
It's the Hall of Records.
The Election Commission. The Hall of Records.
Okay, yeah. So, and...
Not the good kinds, historical ones.
Yeah, exactly. That's very important. Right. You gotta be very specific. This is actually... historic scene, apparently.
The results of last month's mayor election. All 48,000 voters and who each one of them voted for.
I thought this was a secret ballot.
Meh.
Okay. Aaron A. Aronson voted for... Hub. Aaron L. Aronson voted for... Hub. Arthur B. Ablabab voted for... Oh.
Arthur B. Ablabab. That's a great name.
They have some great names in Springfield.
I know.
That's a traditional Springfieldian name.
Yeah, this is apparently the first time the word meh ever appears in The Simpsons.
Ah!
And it is apparently was popular. The Simpsons are credited by popularizing that word, and it has since then, you know, been... but basically adopted into various dictionaries and acceptable...
That is awesome.
Acceptable... vocabulary
alongside yoink.
and we also get an eep from Bart in this episode as well. Bart and Lisa are clued in by an informer to come to meet in a parking garage. This is a Deep Throat, All the President's Men reference, where Smithers is the he's in the shadows at first. But then Homer pulls up with the headlights directly on him, and we find it's Smithers. He leaks the information to Bart and Lisa because they don't say it, but as Smithers, as a homosexual, is not comfortable with some of the politics of the Republican Party and wants Bob out of office. He tells them a name, Edgar Neubauer. To find that name, and you'll find the information necessary to bring Bob down. They search phone books. They search, newspapers or something. They're looking through more records trying to find the name. Until
they have a callback joke to the bats in the library.
Yes, which is really, it's really good. And they finally do discover the name Edgar Neubauer.
Please, come here. I found Edgar Neubauer. The dead have risen and they're voting Republican.
No, Bart, don't you see? Dead people can't vote. Look, Prudence Goodwife died 1641. She voted for Bob, too. So did Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper. Even the Pet Cemetery voted for Bob. Look, Mr. and Mrs. Bananas, Humph Beauregard. Oh, my poor dead kitty. Please, not you, too. All right, Bob. Now it's personal.
Hey, he did try to kill me.
I love that everyone in the family, is just kind of forgets that they tried to murder Bart. They're just like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Well, yeah, it's funny. In later episodes when Bob gets out, they're all super worried about that. And this episode, it just kind of slips their mind, you know, whatever.
It's a lot of stuff that happens to this family. You can't pay attention to every bump in the road.
Yes, exactly. You know, they forget things. Even though Lisa did remind Homer of everything Bob did earlier in the episode. Bob goes to trial for his supposed crime. Lionel Hutz is a terrible attorney. He straight up asks Bob if he did it. Bob says no. So he doesn't know what to do. Bob is very gracious in allowing both Lisa and Bart to take over the case against him. Lisa...
This is how trials work, right?
Yes.
Children can question the mayor on corruption charges.
Of course.
Standard operating procedure.
In Springfield, at least. I think it's the true. Springfield judicial system... There's only
eight government employees in all of Springfield. So, you know, they don't have time for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're in Springfield... They don't necessarily follow the rules in a hard and fast sort of way. You know, you bend them once in a while.
Just can't say no to kids.
Exactly. And I don't know. It makes sense. All of this is really like Bob's character in this. I don't know if they've ever played up his ego so much this way. They've sure played. They played up his vanity. I don't know about the ego part, because Lisa basically tricks him into admitting everything he's done, and he is even happily enough presents all the evidence of his own of his corruption.
And he's so well organized; it's all in binders and videotapes and everything you would need.
Some
of which he pulls out of his hair.
Yeah, well,
nice.
I mean,
well, that's a lot of hair. You know, there's plenty of storage space up there.
He has a lot of hair. Exactly. Marge keeps stuff in her. Marge keeps stuff in her hair. I think he can keep stuff in his hair. Bob is convicted, basically, but they ask why, Bob? Why?
Wrong clip.
Oh, here it goes.
But why?
Because you need me, Springfield. Your guilty conscience may force you to vote Democratic. Deep down inside, you secretly long for a cold-hearted Republican to lower taxes, brutalize criminals, and rule you like a king. That's why I did this, to protect you from yourselves. Now, if you don't mind, I have a city to run.
Bailiffs, place the mayor under arrest.
What?
Oh, yes. All that stuff I did.
It's pretty classic.
Bob is just like, oh, right.
As long as you tell the truth, you can never go to jail.
That's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works. Bob is sent back to minimum security prison. Where?
Now, Robbie, did you pull his can't handle the truth speech?
I did not. No, I'm sorry.
Aww. All right, then I'm lodging an official complaint.
That's fine. I can only pull so much. We're already pushing at the edges of free use, fair use. he is sent back to minimum security prison, where he becomes a ninth on the prison's rowing team.
Technically, I believe he's an eighth.
Oh, is he the eighth?
I don't believe the coxswain counts as a member. Well, they're a member of the team, obviously.
I didn't quite understand the accent. The coxswain, is that his actual name for what they do?
Yes, spelled coxswain.
How do coxswain. You know that, Matt?
I know weird random stuff.
You're not a sports person. You don't. You didn't. You never. You weren't in crew, were you?
I was not. No, I was too fat.
That you're sitting down, Matt. A fat person can have strong arms. Like you don't.
It's true. the boat needs to be light as well.
You can't fault that logic.
I mean, regardless, he makes the same grumble that he does when he gets hit in the face with a rake, and that is
so. In Bob's view, Princeton and rakes are both his mortal enemies.
Well,
and Bart.
Bob has three. But that is
he's older. He's had more time.
That's true.
That's true.
Okay, guys. I don't think this has ever actually been answered. How old is Bob?
Nope. No idea.
What's your guess?
I mean, you have to imagine he's like roughly around Marge and her sister's age since they get married. Like he's of that That's generation.
True. So late 30s?
Yeah, something like
early
that.
Early 40s? Somewhere. I picture him at even 40.
That sounds about
Seems
right.
About yeah, right.
His parents seem to be in their like late 60s, early 70s.
I'm gonna say point. It seems like he's just like that. Hey, I'm 40, but whatever. I'm an intellectual. this is a great episode. Even like the way that it criticizes and pokes fun at politics is even more so appropriate as the years go on. It is.
It's really sad how much this applies to this election. The sad part is I kind of wish there was a candidate like Sideshow Bob because at least he's competent and evil. we don't even have a lawful evil candidate this election.
Vote for me, competent and evil. You don't have to pick one or the other.
There's been a this week in particular. There's been a lot of talk about the fact that you know the Simpsons you know predicted Trump as president. But this episode, I can't think. I don't know. They have you know done political satire multiple times. I think this one stands out as the best example. I'm trying to think of another episode that does it better, but.
I definitely don't think there's one that does it better. I do think the episode where Ralph runs for president is good. It's from later seasons, I think, the late teen seasons. It is not nearly as good as this, but it's definitely a very interesting, very politically savvy episode, essentially.
Yeah, and go ahead.
I would say not in the exact same terms, but the immigration episode with Apu, I think, has some good political satire in it. And again, Mr. Burns running for governor has a decent amount of that same punch to it, I would say.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like they were kind of cutting their teeth on those on that episode in particular. And I think this is the one where they were just like, I think that the show had been around long enough that they were confident enough that they could not pull punches in doing an entire episode that is basically devoted to politics.
Yeah, and they had the credibility as a show at that point to really put this forward. But I think part of it is that as much as this episode has some unkind things to say about Republicans, it's really just as much a criticism of the dog and pony show that is campaigns and politics writ large. You know, everybody, Quimby included, is just sort of pandering with Bart and Lisa or spitting easy slogans, that sort of thing. It's more a jab at the political system and the kind of folks like Homer who get swayed by it than it is a particular takedown, I think.
That's true, because at least in the Mr. Burns for governor, you had one candidate, Mr. Burns, who's essentially evil, and another candidate who looks to be a competent government professional. Whereas in this episode, you have two people who are basically caricatures of the worst of their parties. So,
That's a good. That I think that noise really encapsulates Matt's feelings. There you go, Matt. That's Matt's version of the grumble. But we will rank this episode at the end of the show. We'll see how high it goes. On to our next segment. It's time for my favorite episode, where again we have not one but two submissions for Sideshow Bob Roberts. First from Jeremy, we have, "This is absurdist satire at its finest, certainly prescient about the cult personality around clowns becoming politicians. I like this episode because its take on politics is that it's all kind of a sham. The final scene where Bart is worried about who the dish ran away with is something I will always laugh. His expression of glee, Lisa's of disgust, the perfect line delivery, of course, gets me every time." And secondly, from Brendan, "I'm a sucker for when The Simpsons get political, and there's no better political episode than Sideshow Bob Roberts. From Birch Barlow and his defense of spokesperson Joe Camel to Bart's declaration of having two mortal enemies at age 10, the entire first act is amazing. The show moves into an All the President's Men homage. It shows how, at this point, the show could weave between serious political drama and humor when Bart and Lisa go to meet Smithers in the parking garage and Homer is shown reading Archie comics, bemoaning those smug Riverdale jerks. Bob's speech in the courtroom at the climax is still one of the best endings to an episode the show has ever done. Whenever I want to show people how good the show can be, I show them this episode." Excellently written, both Jeremy and Brendan. Thank you much for your submissions. If anyone out there has a submission for my favorite episode, please submit it to simpsonshowpod@gmail.com. I can't guarantee if I don't get it there that I will be able to get to it. I regularly check that for submissions. On to our next segment. It is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group, see what was up the week or two surrounding the debut of an episode. One guy, obviously this was, you know, there's probably going to people can get some hurt feelings. One gentleman, apparently a Republican, even though various other Republican members of the news group also felt he was distasteful. He basically went into a long post about how he wished a lot of violence on Matt Groening.
Wow.
Not just a little.
No, it was very graphic, very violent, very kind of disturbing that someone would go to these links about a cartoon, a fictional show about people. But
it's not a documentary.
No, not well. In this gentleman's mind, apparently it was. This was so bad that a Life in Hell strip, which Matt Groening's original cartoon, the one he published that week, addressed that very this very comment, saying, making fun of the fact that he wanted to go to the internet to relax, and then he logs into that news group and sees that post in which he is threatened a lot of bodily harm, and then the gentleman even replied on the news group again, saying, "Ha ha ha! I was just trying to get. It was a joke." me acting like an insane...
That old chestnut.
Yeah, I'm an insane person. I got one over on you. Okay.
Sure.
Okay, crazy.
You reacted to me, so you're the loser.
Yes, exactly. Precisely. But overall, I this was still largely taking place. This episode came out when the news group was down for... At least the archive of the news group is unavailable. So I found that little nugget, but not much else. Okay, on to our next segment. Time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL's gonna give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Our listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite Disney reference / satire moment? Whatever, you know, you get the gist. Tons of great answers. Once again, thank you guys for participating. First, from Ryan at Ryan J. Acco, one churro, please. That will be $14. Brett at Brett Frisky, Scratch Chaser.
Totally worth it.
Scratch Chaser from the Itchy and Scratchy Land episode. Hands down, it was perfectly redone violently. Cody at Commander Cody A3, when Sherry Bobbins insists she is not Mary Poppins, but in a completely original character, like Ricky Rouse or Model Muck. Priscilla at Vast Priscilla. Disney dollars is one for sure. The other would have to be the Roger Meyer Sr. references for Walt. Nazi Supermen are our superiors. Ryan at EID9. I would say Sherry Bobbins, but she's an original character, like Ricky Rouse or Model Muck.
That was kind of popular.
Yeah, Joey RZ at Joey RZ. Favorite Disney reference? Little Duffland, because it captures the horror of It's a Small World all too well if you're awake. Chris, Homer's version of Under the Sea from Homer Badman. There'll be no accusations, just friendly crustaceans under the sea. Then Marge has to be a killjoy. That's your solution to everything. Move under the sea. It's not going to happen. Not with that attitude. Brian Green in Special Edna, the Simpsons writer, perfectly skewered Disney's Epcot Center. Most notably, how laughably outdated Future World is these days. I still have a soft spot for the weird anachronistic future that Disney's Tomorrowland and
In some ways it's good, in other ways it's horrific.
It's really Heather, definitely have to agree that 2001 Greyhounds is the winner here. See My Vest has got to be one of the best songs ever. Grizzly Bear Underwear, Turtlenecks, I've Got My Share. It was by far the most popular answer. See My Vest, hands down, number one popular. Brendan, Steamboat Itchy animation is so spot on to the early Mickey cartoons. Holly, absolutely has to be the Seven Duffs. There's Tipsy and Queasy and Surly and Remorseful and the lesser known Dizzy, Edgy, and Sleazy. And finally, Sean, perfect parody of Mary Poppins with Simpsons, Califragilistic, Expiella, Annoyed, Grunchious, fantastic jokes, and everybody loves Sherry Bobbins. Favorite moment is when Sherry and the kids meet Willie in the park doing a one-man band performance of Maniac from Flashdance. We learned that two were set to be married until she got her sight back, and suddenly the ugliest man in Glasgow wasn't good enough for her. Also, underrated Burns moment when he gets struck by lightning and has a weird sensation in his chest. Matt, what is your answer? I don't know. Curious.
Well, my answer is actually Disney adjacent. It's from Lisa the Beauty Queen when the blue-haired lawyer and a couple of goons attempt to shut down the happiest place on Earth, Carnival, and Principal Skinner basically kicks the crap out of them. I love the idea as Disney is an incredibly litigious company and taking out on a small school carnival for using the phrase the happiest place on Earth.
How dare they? That's their IP.
That's right.
That's their brand. Got to protect.
They don't.
Brand.
If they don't defend it, they don't get to keep it anymore.
That's correct.
What is your answer, Andrew?
So my sentimental favorite is See My Vest, but I have to throw some love to the Simpsons movie, which I go back and forth on. But I think one of the funniest parts of it was when they did a riff on Snow White and had the various woodland creatures help Homer and Marge get ready for snuggling, not to mention Bart putting a bra on his head and saying, "I'm the mascot for an evil corporation."
My answer is Scratchtasia. Watching that last week reminded me, it is such a good, like, even sometimes frame-by-frame representation of what Fantasia was, but making it that demented, itchy, and scratchy version, it is just...
It's like halfway between Ren and Stimpy and Disney.
Yes, which is kind of... Exactly. That's a good sweet spot. Next week's question, what is your favorite political reference and or moment?
Ooh.
Certainly a lot of contenders in this episode, but obviously we mentioned a few others. You know, we'll see where it goes. I will post this question on all of our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod, and you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Follow us, like us, get in touch with us, let us know what you think. I try and post stuff Simpsons related occasionally. People have great community at all of our social media places. It is time for our next segment, Matt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, your time to gloat. It is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am smart. SMART.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each challenge each other with three trivia questions, one easy, one medium, one hard, trying to stump the other. We have a wager for this season. The host that doesn't win has to mow their lawn in their wife's Sunday's best. We may have to improvise because I don't know if I'm going to have a lawn by the time this episode.
Well, you just get a plant and I will trim the plant for you.
Okay.
I got scissors. It'll totally work.
What if it's in Canada, Matt?
You can mail the plant to me. I will trim it, take some pictures or some video, and then send it back to you.
We'll figure it out later. No theme.
It's a good plan. It's a good plan.
Yeah, exactly. No theme this week. Matt, start me off. Give me an easy question.
All right, sir. Your easy question today. There is a theme.
Uh-oh.
Okay. What member of the Rat Pack is Professor Fink Professor Frink modeled after?
Be Jerry Lewis.
That is correct, sir.
Theme about Professor Frink, Jerry Lewis. See where you go with this one. I also have a I don't know, loose thing. They're all from, these are all from the same episode from the Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie show.
Ooh, I like that one.
It's a great episode. What is the name of the temporary character that lives with the Simpsons in only that episode?
I believe it's Roy.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Give me a medium question.
All right, your medium question. What is Professor Frink's middle name?
Really? I feel like I should know this. I feel like it's right on the edge of my Professor Frink. I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. His first name is John. That kickstarts it in your brain a little bit.
I am blanking. I have no idea. I think that made me less sure of my.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sorry, my bad.
It's no.
All right. Do you acquiesce?
Yeah, Andrew. Do you know the answer to this?
Is it Nurtlebaum?
Andrew, you are correct. That is a point for the guest.
That's two points for the guest. Nurtlebaum?
Oh, Nurtlebaum. That is correct.
You're killing me, Matt. Okay. Your medium question. What line of dialogue is ad-libbed into Itchy and Scratchy to write off the character of Poochie?
Okay. Let me see if I can get this word for word. I have to go now. My planet needs me. And then it's scratched in Poochie died on the way back to his home planet.
That is correct. You're right.
I think you deserve an extra point for a pitch perfect line reading there.
No. We don't give Matt extra points for that stuff, all right?
That's true. I don't ever get bonus points.
He doesn't need the help, all right? I need the help. It's gonna you railroad me. Okay, Matt. I am terrified of your hard question, considering that your question.
I'll give you this. I went back and forth on what was the hard medium and what was a hard.
Oh my god! What you're saying is you gave me one easy question and two hard questions.
Well, I consider them both mediums, but well, you know,
Matt, we're actually, not all, the funny we're thing not all is supercomputers in human clothes in like the, you are.
So, what were you saying?
I said we're not all supercomputers in human clothes like you are.
Well, both of the answer to these questions were also in the book we read for the bonus episode for March.
Well, as soon as they started mentioning anything related to like equations, I just went loop. So
no, that's Professor Frink.
I probably skipped over it because I was eyes were glazing over. Give me a question.
Uh-huh. All right, what is Professor Frink's proposed name for a cube?
A freakahedron.
There you go. You got that.
That's the medium question.
My bad.
No.
Hey, what do you think?
No, you shouldn't complain.
I'll take the extra point. Whatever. I'm sorry.
All right, hit me.
Your hard question. What is the name of the character that supposedly voices the Roadrunner?
Oh,
it's not the actual voice of the Roadrunner.
No. What is her name? I can think of the fact that she said meep and they doubled it up, so she only had to pay her for the one meep. I want to say it's like Joan or Jean something, but no, I got nothing.
Andrew, do you know?
Is it June Bellamy or is that the actual?
Yes, that's
nope,
what it is.
It is June Bellamy. You are correct.
Damn it. Right.
So you have combined 5 points to rival us. Okay. Did you prepare any trivia questions, Andrew?
Not only did I prepare trivia questions, since this is a competition, I prepared an easy, medium, and hard question for each of you, so you have equal opportunity to keep up with points.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. All right. This is you. I applaud your efforts. Let's do one person at a time. You start with Matt. How about that?
Okay.
We'll do that.
All right, Matt, your easy question. According to the leader-loving movementarians in The Joy of Sect, who invented Morse code?
The leader?
That is correct. Your medium question. Mm-hmm. What is the name of the puppeteer who operates Gabbo?
Arthur Crandall, I believe.
That is also correct.
Yes.
You have correctly been calling him Crandall this whole time. And last but not least, your hard question. Name two of the three icons of coolness who Poochie references in his rap from Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie. It was not intentional, but I'm also in keeping with Robbie's theme.
That's kind of I like it.
The Fonz.
Correct.
Or Fonzarelli. That is the only one I can remember.
Yeah, Robbie, are you allowed to steal? Or
I can't think of anyone besides the Fonz either, so I no luck.
The other acceptable answers are cartoon spokesman Joe Camel.
Okay.
Nice.
And Mr. T in the
Pity
the
Fool. Of course, Mr. T.
He is the epitome of cool.
I'll go a little later. It's true. I'll go a little later. All right. I'm ready.
Robbie, your easy question. In 30 Minutes Over Tokyo, Homer has to answer a trivia question about Japan. What is the answer to that question?
Is the answer Japan?
It is.
Yes. It's a good joke. It's a really good joke.
That is a joke inside a joke. Inside a joke.
It's an Incepta joke, if you will. Or Freak-a-he joke, depending. Your medium question. What is the name of the sportscaster whom Gabo imitates during his theme song?
That would be... Okay. He's Vin Scully.
That is correct.
Robbie, I am impressed.
Vin Scully, the Dodgers, he's still, I want to say either, he's in his 90s and I think just recently retired. I'm not sure. LA Dodgers, baseball. Great answer. Okay, hard question.
All right, your hard question, specially picked for the host of the Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
In Sex, Pies, and Idiot Scrapes, what two appropriately color-coded Marvel superheroes joined in the St. Patrick's Day brawl between supporters of Northern Ireland and supporters of the Republic of Ireland?
Oh, God. I feel like I should know this, but let me... Okay, the Hulk. Let's say the Hulk. He's green.
That is correct.
Okay. The other green one. You said Marvel. I can't remember this episode whatsoever, so I'm completely going off context. Green Marvel characters... Hulk's easy.
I feel it's only fair to tell you that the Northern Ireland colors are orange, not green.
Yes, I know. I just... Orange is also not a great superhero color. Orange? Orange? Green.
Yeah, even I got no clue on this.
You're probably going to tell me and I'm going to go, oh, but tell me, I don't know.
Correct answer is The Thing.
Of course! Oh! Okay. Of course, The Thing. I'm an idiot. Okay, well...
It's got some good visual equivalence there.
Yeah, exactly. Or The Thing. Why could I not? Now I love Ben Grimm so much. How could I not think of that? Okay, so that... I got the answer wrong, and that would have been very helpful, but I am up 1 point on Matt for this episode. I got 7, Matt got 6. We are tied. No, that's not right, is it? No, we are tied. Okay, yes, he was up 1. Entering this week's episode, now we are tied 24-24. So, it's like a war every single week. It's like I gotta just like scrape in to hold on, making up ground whenever I can. We are running super late, super long this episode. So, again, no listener submitted questions, but again, keep sending them in. I promise I am paying attention. I will use them when we have the time. You can, of course, send those in to our social media, to our email, any of those places, as well as the theme. We have not got a theme submission in a little bit. If you have a theme, send it in. On to our final segment we end every single episode with. It is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best episode ever is part of the show where Matt and I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling list of every episode ever and how good they are. It's a great episode, Matt. Is it, okay, in your mind, is it top 20?
Easily.
Top 10?
Easily.
Is it top 10?
Definitely top 10.
Whoa, definitely top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where in the top 10 is it? Give me where you're putting it.
I gotta be honest, I really, really enjoy this episode. It is tight, it is funny, it has, you know, Kelsey Grammer and Phil Hartman in it. I just, even if Phil Hartman's part is really low, I'm thinking somewhere around probably 5 or 6 is where I'm looking at.
Whoa, 5 or 6.
Yeah, I know. I feel this is an amazing
Better
amazing...
than I Married Marge?
Yeah.
Better than I Married Marge. I Married Marge has Homer's marriage proposal to Marge with his butt crack in frame.
Well, yeah.
Wait, people propose differently than that?
I mean...
I definitely proposed an onion ring. I mean, I don't know how else you would.
My
wife returned my proposal with a peach ring.
Well, I mean, that's the best thing that could happen. An edible ring. I would not put it quite as high as you would.
Okay.
I would say I'm a little bit, I don't know. It would be in the, if in the top 10, it'd be in the top, you know, 8, 9, 10 spots. I feel like it has a lot in common with those episodes in particular, drawing like the Bard of Darkness, the Rosebud, the Mr. Plow, the Deep Space Homer, all thematically, you know, about a one thing for the most part. Very funny. I feel like the only weakness in this is that it is so politically heavy.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not necessarily as universally appealing as some of these episodes, which that is true. I'm not going to say it. I find it very interesting and funny and wonderful, but I don't know. I try and keep that in mind a little bit in the corner of my mind. I would say the highest I could go would be 8. I would not put this above Homer Loves Flanders or Last Second of Springfield or I Married. I think those are all superlative episodes. I feel like this is a great Sideshow Bob episode, but it's not going to be better. We have already 2 Sideshow Bob episodes in the top 10. I don't think they should be 1, 4, 5. I feel like this is not as strong as Black Widow or Cape Fear.
That's true. And like you said, those are definitely more universal ones. I think people who don't really enjoy politics wouldn't get a whole lot out of this. I can see that. I can see number 8. It's a good spot.
Andrew,
any lower than that, we're going to have to fight.
Okay, Andrew, where would you, like, even on your own personal list, where would you put this one?
So I think it's probably the second best Sideshow Bob episode for me, behind Cape Fear, but I don't know that you could put it up as high as number 3 or number 4 there. But I think top 10 is a good spot. I think once you get into the top 10 or top 20 with this show, even just through the beginning of season 6, you can pretty much shuffle them, and there's not really an order you can argue with.
It's
really tough. These are so good. All these shows are so good. It's just absolutely ridiculous, the level of quality that is just was maintained for so long. Okay, so number 8, Matt, are we simpatico?
I think we can agree on that.
Okay, that's Sideshow Bob Roberts. You can hear me typing it in. Number 8, right below Homer Loves Flanders, right above Bard of Darkness. Cape Fear, still number 1 on our list. Last place is Homer's Odyssey, down there at 106. It will be supplanted at a future date. I guarantee that.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of the episode right now in mind that I would put below it. It's a bad episode. I hesitate to call
one presumes.
I can't wait to find out what it is.
I don't call very many Simpsons episodes bad, but this one is bad.
Wow, man, I can't wait to hear what this is.
It's going to be a while. We still got a while to go. But you can find this list on our website. It's simply thesimpsonshow.com. The list in its entirety, plus broken down by season. And very soon, we will be breaking out the Trias of Horror episodes into their own list. What is our next episode, Matt?
Let me see. Next episode is, oh, look, Treehouse of Horror 5.
Treehouse of Horror 5 might, in my recollection, it is my favorite Treehouse of Horror, but...
Really? Well, I'll pay extra special attention to how terrible you are.
What? Because okay, well, I guess we're going to have to fight it out over Treehouse. I love Treehouse of Horror 5. 5's great.
Or will we?
It's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, say anything.
They're all good ones.
Yeah, even the worst Treehouse of Horrors are still interesting just because there's such a, you know, change of pace. Okay.
It's true.
Let's see. That will be the end of this episode. Before we go, Andrew, plug your stuff. Tell the people what to go read and see and do.
That's an awesome responsibility. First of all, thank you guys for having me back. It's always a lot of fun. And I want to please invite your listeners to check out my website, which is theandrewblog.net. We cover every corner of pop culture, from movie reviews of movies from Spotlight to Deadpool, to television shows like Better Call Saul, The Walking Dead, and lots about The Simpsons. And you can also find me on Twitter at The Andrew Blog. So thank you guys very much for having me.
It is a pleasure. I I enjoy your writing quite a bit. You're in a world where we are flooded with people writing about pop culture, myself included. You do an excellent job.
Thank you very much.
You can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. That's MixmasterCereal. Please check out my comic book podcast, Handsome Boys Comics Hour, handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That's true. However, after listening to this week's episode of Reply All, I have decided that I too will become a forecaster for, you know, exactly what is going to happen in the elections using the same method. So if you see anybody with a horrified look on their face wandering around the Midwest writing down the furiously racist things that people say, that's probably me. So come say hi.
Every week, man, I'm just like, wow, that is incredibly specific. You'd have to be listening to Reply All.
You would. It's a great episode this week.
It's a good podcast. I endorse it. I think with that, we can call it a day. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.